On January 1, 1945, the Elbeuf launched Operation Bodenplatte, involving over 850 combat aircraft of all types that the German Air Force had managed to assemble after much effort. The aircraft were divided into up to 60 aircraft per group with the aim of attacking 16 Allied airbases simultaneously. It was the last major gamble of the Elbeuf in the war, and like the Ardennes offensive, it was the final gamble of the German ground forces. Both operations took place on the Western Front and were related to each other. Two clear objectives can be established for Bodenplatte. The first of these was to destroy as many enemy aircraft as possible, which was expected to gain some respite in German skies, which at that time were completely dominated by the Allies. On the other hand, it was intended to relieve the pressure and harassment that the German ground forces, which had participated in the Ardennes offensive, were receiving from Allied aircraft. The Allied bases targeted were mainly on Belgian soil, along with others in Dutch and French territory, all of them close to the front line. On the other hand, the German air bases from which their planes took off were scattered throughout German territory, some of them being quite far from the border. This meant that they had to fly over many kilometers of German territory, which, as will be seen below, turned into a catastrophe in some cases. The operation was carried out in total secrecy and was able to catch the Allies completely off guard. In fact, the operation had been carried out with such secrecy that it also took by surprise many German anti-aircraft positions that had not been informed of the mission due to its secrecy. This failure of information and coordination caused some German anti-aircraft batteries to open fire on the Elbeuf formations, thinking that they were Allied planes. The final result of the last major raid on Allied territory was the destruction of some 320 Allied aircraft and around 200 damaged. However, having destroyed the vast majority of the aircraft on the ground, the aircraft were without pilots inside and only 14 Allied airmen were killed in total. The Germans lost some 280 aircraft along with around 200 pilots. Most of their losses were attributed to the effective anti-aircraft fire of the Allied forces, which proved highly lethal, as well as to the anti-aircraft fire coming from the German batteries, which were also aimed at their own aircraft without warning. Although the balance of the number of aircraft destroyed may be favorable to Germany, the truth is that the Allies took barely a week to recover from their losses, while the Luftwaffe never could. The Luftwaffe ace, Adolf Galland, had this to say on the subject: "After Bodenplatte, I didn't think there was any point in continuing to fight. However, the more than 500 Allied aircraft disabled as a result of Bodenplatte represent a result that the Germans could never have achieved in aerial combat in exchange for 280 of their own aircraft. This is because at that time the difference between German and Allied pilots was huge, given the increasingly poor training that German aviators received. It is clear that by early 1945, the daring operations of Luftwaffe, which had been key to every previous German offensive, had also come to an end. Overextended along the major fronts on which Germany fought, it had begun to lose its air superiority mainly from late 1942 and early 1943. By 1943, approximately 45% of the available Luftwaffe aircraft were deployed on the Eastern Front. However, as far as fighters are concerned, only 22% of the available fighters were in this theater, while 60% of German fighters were assigned to the defense of Germany and 18% to the Mediterranean theater. The data indicates that the priority of the Elbeuf fighters was to defend the skies over Germany from the huge bombings that the Allies were carrying out on its cities. These bombings had begun timidly during the first years of the war, and it was from 1943 onwards that they began to increase significantly with the dropping of more than 200,000 tons of bombs on the cities of the Third Reich. During 1944, the figure was close to reaching 1 million tons, and in the first 4 months of 1945, the Allies had time to drop almost 400,000 tons of bombs. As a matter of curiosity and to highlight the magnitude of the damage, the atomic bomb dropped on Nagasaki was equivalent to some 21,000 tons of TNT. In 1943, Luftwaffe lost about 100 fighters on the Eastern Front, while on the Mediterranean and Western Fronts, which on this occasion were the skies over Germany, about 3,740. In 1944, losses increased considerably. ,600 fighters were lost on the Eastern Front, while on the Western Front the number rose to 5. In total, between September 1943 and October 1944, Germany lost around 35,000 aircraft of all types, of which 24% were against the Soviets and 75% on the Western Front. During this period, Operation Overlord took place, definitively opening the long-awaited Second Front. This was followed by Operation Backration on the Eastern Front and the exponential increase in bombing of German cities from the end of 1944 onwards. Although it is clear that the Red Army took the lead role in the ground operations that defeated the Germans, the responsibility for the defeat of the Luftwaffe falls more on the British and Americans. Thus, despite the massive production of aircraft by Germany, which in 1944 also broke all records with almost 40,000 units, the losses suffered on the Western, Mediterranean, and Eastern fronts were devastating and contributed significantly to the fall of the Luftwaffe. In any case, if we had to choose the three main factors that led to the definitive fall of the Luftwaffe during 1944, production would not be one of them. First of all, we have the fuel shortage, which worsened significantly from the summer months of that year. On the 12th of May, a series of major air raids began on German fuel plants, which completely reduced fuel production and availability for the following months. Albert Speer wrote the following that same day: "The enemy has struck at one of our weakest points. If they persist and do as they did this time, they will soon destroy fuel production." To these words, the German minister added that in terms of industrial capacity, the 12th of May was the worst day of the war up to that time. Shortly afterwards and following further bombing raids, Speer issued a report in July in which he stated that 98% of Germany's jet fuel plants had been put out of service. Aviation fuel production fell from 180,000 tons to 20,000 tons between March and November 1944, with the Luftwaffe receiving a monthly supply of 180,000 tons of fuel in April to just 10,000 tons in August. This reduction was also affected by the loss of Romania during the months of August and September 1944, where the main German oil sources were located at Ploiești. Finally, the fuel stockpile was reduced from 575,000 tons in March to 175,000 tons in November. How the new circumstances affected the Buff Light brings us to the second factor that explains its precipitous decline from the summer months of 1944 onwards. German flying schools depended on fuel to train their pilots. Between 60,000 and 80,000 tons of fuel were needed per month to train 16 German pilots of different types. Although these demands were never met, until mid-May 1944, the amount of fuel received was acceptable. However, only 13,500 tons of fuel were delivered in July, 13,400 in August, and 6,300 in September. This shortage led to the closure of most basic flight schools in order to keep the advanced flight schools operating. Furthermore, the training period for new pilots was drastically reduced due to the fact that they were needed at the front to replace casualties and mainly due to the shortage of fuel to train them. By 1944, the pilot training program had been reduced to just 111 flying hours, of which only 20 were devoted to the fighters they would eventually use, these being the Fuel-190 and the Bf-109. The new training time was less than half of that devoted to the instruction of German cadets in 1942, which had exceeded 200 hours. During the summer months of 1944, when the crisis was intensifying, Germanjing attempted to solve or at least patch up the problem and ordered a greater effort to train pilots more thoroughly and quickly. He also issued an order to increase the number of fighter pilots, retraining bomber pilots who would fly fighters. Another measure that also began to be implemented during the last months of 1944 was to recruit people with some flying experience to skip the basic training stage in flight schools. In conclusion, the shortage of fuel limited the sorties of German fighters to defend their cities, industrial centers, and communication centers. This also resulted in poor training for the few pilots who were still able to fight, which led to their inferior performance in combat. Finally, the third factor to highlight was the enormous air superiority of the Allies in the air and the inability of the depleted German fighter squadrons to oppose it. It is estimated that during the last air battles, the Allied formations were about 18 times larger than the German ones. This meant that the several dozen German fighters that were sent out to intercept a group of up to 400 or 500 bombers had to contend with a similar number of escort fighters, which completely unbalanced the combat. Just as the land armies enjoyed major new weapons during the final phase of the war, such as the Tiger II or the Jazz Tiger for the Panzerwaffe or the STG-4 for the infantry, the Luft was also able to count on new developments. The main one was the introduction of the Messerschmitt Main 262, which was the first jet fighter aircraft in the world to enter service. This German fighter entered service between July and August 1944 and represented a real revolution. Its main functions were those of fighter, interceptor, attack bomber, reconnaissance aircraft, and night fighter. Its main advantage was its speed, as it was almost 200 kilometers per hour faster than any Allied fighter aircraft. However, it also had serious limitations. Despite its speed, its jet engines were slow to accelerate and prone to failure, especially during landings, making the Messer 1262 vulnerable. Furthermore, the engines had a very short service life due to the fact that they had to be produced with increasingly inferior quality materials. On the other hand, and as previously stated, German pilots with little experience and training had difficulty operating them. Despite its speed, the Messer 1262 fighters could only attack enemy bombers due to the large speed differential. Furthermore, fuel shortages and limited production of the Messer 1262 could not compete with the overwhelming numerical superiority of the Allied fighters. In short, the ME-262 arrived too late and with too many limitations to be able to change the course of the war. Around 100 aircraft of this type were produced, although only 300 actually saw combat. It is estimated that the Messerschmitt 1262 destroyed around 450 enemy aircraft at the cost of suffering around 100 combat losses. Its fame increased for many years after the war when it was said that only one Messerschmitt 1262 had been shot down in combat, in exchange for over 500 kills by Allied fighters and bombers, completely boosting the reputation of this fighter jet. Furthermore, Karl Kohler, chief of staff of the Luftwaffe, told his American captors that if there had been 500 or 600 Me-262s operational in the autumn of 1944, the American daylight terror bombing would have been broken. On the 8th of May 1945, the last aerial shootdown of the conflict occurred when an Me-262 shot down a Soviet Jak 9 over Freiburg following the air offensive of Operation Bodenplatte. The final actions of the Buff Light were focused on both defending German cities and production centers and supporting the final attacks by ground forces as much as possible. In the same way as the Panzer units in the air, the Buff Light tried to group its last squadrons to launch the most powerful interception attacks possible. For example, on April 7, 1945, 183 Fiebel 190 and B-109 fighters, together with a large formation of jet aircraft, attacked a large Allied formation of 13 bombers and 800 fighters. The result of this engagement was the shooting down of about 8 Allied bombers along with a similar number of fighters in exchange for 130 German aircraft. A few days later, from April 13 to 15, Allied aircraft launched a massive attack on German airfields where there were still quite a few aircraft remaining, most of which were unable to fly due to lack of fuel. These attacks managed to destroy around 400 German fighters on the ground. As the Allies advanced further into German territory, the Luftwaffe had to operate increasingly from motorways and roads due to the lack of suitable airfields. Finally, most of the fighter units now occupying airfields in Austria and Czechoslovakia began to surrender en masse to the Western Allies, in order to avoid having to capitulate to the Soviets. In addition to the actions just described, which refer to traditional air combat, there was another project in which German kamikaze pilots participated. The idea arose during the development phase of the V-1 rockets that were to be launched over southern England. Since manned rockets would not be very accurate, pilot Anna Rage proposed that another model be designed that could be manned, thus increasing their effectiveness. The precision of the V-1 and later V-2 rockets was not entirely necessary because they were to be launched against urban targets tens of kilometers away. However, Anna Rage and other figures argued that if manned they could be used against smaller targets such as ships or bridges. Many reacted negatively to the proposal, but eventually the high command of the Luftwaffe decided to develop it. The men who volunteered to approve the first prototypes had to sign a document informing them that the action to be carried out could very likely mean their death. However, in an attempt to reduce tension a little and raise the morale of the volunteer soldiers, they were assured that there was always a chance of surviving. Just seconds before impact, they could eject and escape by parachute from certain death. The first tests went very badly and none of the manned V-1s were able to reach their target, leaving the pilots injured or dead. After receiving the news, Anna Rage herself volunteered and was able to complete one of these tests successfully. Once it was proven that it could be viable, the go-ahead was given to build around 200 manned V-1s. This is how the so-called Leonidas Squadron was formed, which refers to the famous sacrifice of King Leonidas at Thermopylae with his 300 Spartans. Finally, when Hitler learned of the project in November 1944, he decided to cancel it because he was not yet prepared to have to apply this type of suicidal measures. The second Kamikaze project of the Luftwaffe began to take shape during the summer of 1944, like the Japanese one, and was practically similar to that of its Japanese ally, who carried out its first successful suicide attack against the American fleet in the Pacific on October 25. On this occasion, the idea was to load a plane with explosives so that it would crash into a military target with total precision. However, this project was also rejected and only one suicide attack was carried out during the Battle of the Seelu Hills at the end of April 1945. Its objective was to launch attacks on the bridges that the Soviets had established on the Oder, through which Red Army units were crossing to head to Berlin. So, what do you think about the fall of the Buff Light? I would like to announce that my book is about to come out, and in it I will talk about many events that, like this one, took place during the final phase of World War II. If you don't want to miss the launch of the book, as well as all the information related to it, I will leave the Telegram and WhatsApp channels that you can join in the description. Greetings and see you next Sunday. See you soon.